And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. I'm here with Lynn Ware Peake. Our first guest this morning, Charles Graber. He's written The Breakthrough, Immunotherapy and the Race to Cure Cancer. For decades, scientists have puzzled over one of medicine's most confounding mysteries. Why doesn't our immune system recognize and fight cancer the way it does other diseases, like the common cold? The book is groundbreaking. It's riveting. It's expertly told. The Breakthrough is the story, the game-changing science behind the scientific breakthroughs that are changing our ability to recognize and defeat cancer as told through the experiences of the patients, the physicians, and the cancer immunotherapy researchers who are on the front lines. Charles Graber, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's really good to have you. Fighting cancer is complex. When you read this book, you say, whoa, it's even more complex than I thought it was. It's so difficult. There's so many moving pieces. You cover 130 years of the trials and tribulations of immunotherapy, and there's so many people whose contributions bring us to today. And so I have to applaud you. It's quite an undertaking, but it reads like a techno thriller or a medical thriller. So great job on all of that.
Oh, great. Well, thanks. It's helpful to be correct with a history or whatever, but if it's not readable, I wouldn't want to read it. So I figured that every other reader is sort of something like that too. This is a story that's so interesting, and if I can't keep anyone's attention to actually see the interesting parts, that's sort of a waste of time and sort of dangerous too, given that we've just essentially cured some forms of cancer.
Yeah. Now there is a story within the story. And I'd like you to talk to us about it right now. Dr. William Coley and his patient, Elizabeth Dashiell, who's a friend of John Rockefeller's son, she has sarcoma cancer. And, of course, Fred Stein and St. Anthony's Fire. Can you take us through that? It's fascinating.
Yeah, this is an amazing, amazing story. There'd been throughout history, you know, back before Pharaoh, these people had observed that while cancer itself, there was no effective treatment for it, occasionally there'd be what they called spontaneous remissions. You'd have this almost magical occurrence where often following an infection, a patient that seemed really doomed would suddenly have their tumors melt away and they would be cured. And no one could explain this. Sort of fast forward to late 19th century New York City, and a young physician, William Coley, he's really full of fire and enthusiasm and very bright. He's living in an age where, you know, Edison and Tesla are just down the street building, the impossible. There are discoveries being made around the world, new continents, new lakes. It really is a time when people believe that anything is possible. And he approaches one of his first patients, that young woman, Bessie Dashiell, in just such a way. She's 16 years old. She has a little bump on her hand that isn't getting better. She's just it seems like she bumped it on a train. And her friend, who happens to be John D. Rockefeller Jr., the one of the richest young men in the world at that moment, wants her to be seen by the very best. And that little bump turns out to be, as you say, a sarcoma. It's a bone cancer that quickly gets worse and worse. And she's this beautiful, healthy young woman is reduced to a sort of a wretch living on opium and alcohol. And eventually, she's having more and more of herself amputated. It's terrible. And she dies. And Coley, being who he is at the time he was, says there has to be another way to do this. We've just discovered, you know, the antiseptic techniques. We're understanding now that there are microbes, and surely there's something else happening. So he digs back through the medical records, Memorial Hospital, in giant dusty books, copperplate writing, and finds within those records a patient that had come in, a German house painter, with a big tumor on his neck that was considered inoperable. They tried anyway. They couldn't get it all. The wound wouldn't close, and he got infected with what they called St. Anthony's Fire. It was the scourge of 19th century hospitals. It was a raging infection that spread like fire through the wards and was transmitted sheet to sheet, patient to patient, and also had fire-like symptoms, which is sort of a redness and a swelling fever. And it was usually, you know, this guy seemed doubly gone. And instead, his fever broke, his tumors melted, and he walked out the door of the hospital, never to be seen again. And Coley wanted to see if this was true, because whatever happened to Fred Stein, maybe he could replicate that in a patient. And that begins a 19th century detective novel that I don't write, because as exciting as it might be, the real point is that he's going door to door through the immigrant slums of the Lower East Side, sort of think Gangs of New York. It's literally at a time when they made that, you know, the photo book of called How the Other Half Lives, that really exposed the Dickensian conditions there, and using pigeon German to try and track down this guy with no other records. And he finds him, and he brings him back. And in fact, it's true. He verifies that the records were his, that this is what happened to him, and he sets out to try to replicate what happened to Fred Stein in other patients by creating Coley's toxins. It's a patent medicine of sorts that uses a number of types of bacteria that would be found in St. Anthony's Fire, a lot of trial and error, a lot of experiments that sound more Dr. Frankenstein than anything you can imagine in a modern lab. A lot of injecting often poor immigrants in their homes, but patients who are otherwise surely to die of their cancers. And he develops an effective treatment, again, called Coley's toxins, manufactured for decades. And it didn't have a 100% success rate by any means. And the mechanism of action, how it worked and why these dead bugs should work something, you know, what was happening really, he wasn't even himself fully aware that it would be something that we now call the immune system, this whole built-in defense system we have in our blood. He thought maybe it was something about the toxins of these little bugs themselves, the toxins of these bacteria themselves that were like poisons to the cancer. He was thinking, frankly, that it was more of a chemotherapy. But what he had developed really sparked a thought amongst other researchers later. His memory would have been lost, really, because he didn't understand how what he made worked. Others that tried to replicate what he did had mixed results. A lot of it had to do with his personal sort of hands-on, artistic, if you will, delivery of these toxins, the steady injection, watching the fever and monitoring it. But the idea of that, on the one hand, it seemed primitive because it wasn't understood, and because you were sickening patients to make them well. And again, the immune system was a mystery. And then, you know, along comes the discovery of radium. And you've got this radiation that will kill a tumor. And almost as soon as radium is discovered, at the turn of the century, within 6 months, it's already in a hospital being used to treat cancer patients. It ended up killing almost all of the patients it treated, especially in those early days, but it was considered more modern and scientific. And I touch on much of the story of that, how the corner on the radium market in one hospital really made them doubly invested in that technology and the idea of focusing on killing the true breakthrough that's happened recently is a new ability to focus not on cancer, not on the enemy, but on the defense system, liberating the defense system that we have built in that is supposed to defeat things like cancer, recognize and kill things like cancer. So we've always had essentially what I call cut, poison, and burn surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation therapy. And they're all essentially things that hurt us and hopefully hurts cancer more. And the idea is that we out-survive it. And ultimately, cancer is a very creative, mutating force. It dances away from any of those treatments. Given enough time, we see remissions. And it's really only the immune system that can match cancer as something as creative as cancer, step for step. And we've now recognized what the problem was, why immunotherapy didn't work for 100 years, why you know, Coley was really forgotten. He was disgraced and then forgotten by generations of physicians who were taught, if they were taught at all, not to trust an immune-based approach because we cured cancer in mice hundreds of times and we couldn't make it reliably work in people and we didn't understand why. And that's changed. That's all changed really dramatically and incredibly recently.
Well, let's get into that.
Don't know about it even.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Charles Graber. He's the author of a new book called The Breakthrough, Immunotherapy and the Race to Cure Cancer. So you've set the stage really for the whole premise of your book, which is sort of understanding how we have treated cancer in the past, as you say, to cut, burn, and poison. But the immuno response has never been fully explored nor honed in, perfected. But this is the promise that you talk about in The Breakthrough. Take us on another story about a patient. And this one is Jeff, who manages bands, and he finds out that he's got stage 4 kidney cancer, which really means that is pretty much he can write his death certificate. But he undergoes a clinical trial, and the drug being tested was not one that, like chemo or radiation, would attack the tumors, but it would attack the tumor's ability to shut down the natural immune response against them. So tell us about the drug.
That's right. So this Jeff Schwartz is, well, first of all, he's a great guy and a fascinating character, a real true character. And he also considers himself very, very lucky. He was a sort of a right place, right time. One door opened and he walked in, and if it hadn't, he wouldn't be with us today, and he knows it really well. So he was a delight to speak to and to start this book with and really follow him, because I don't necessarily want to read about cancer. I don't necessarily want to write about cancer, but cancer sort of happens. And it's thrust upon you, and it turns out to be rather important. And it was thrust upon Jeff in exactly this way. He is an accountant for musicians. He's got some huge acts, Imagine Dragons, Keisha, Lumineers. He loves music. Music has always been his life, and this is a way for him to be in the scene and to nurture musicians and to keep them going. And then he finds himself the one in need. He suddenly has, as you say, that stage 4 diagnosis. He goes to see who he considers to be the best, or, you know, what do you do when you get that diagnosis? You have to throw yourself and all of your trust to other people. You have to turn yourself over to the experts, and that's what he did. And those experts were, as it happens, experts that had been chemotherapy trained oncologists who had also been trained against the notion that immunotherapy might be possible, and were unaware of the fact that that had changed, that had actually changed several years before. He really felt let down by that system when they essentially sent him home, as you say, and as he says, sent him home to die. He felt they had nothing more to build him for, as the way he thought of it. And he made one more call and was put into a clinical trial. Now, the two things about that. One, Jeff's luck, he tried so hard to get into that clinical trial because he believed it might be his only chance. And that clinical trial was for a drug that blocked cancer's secret handshake, if you will, or at least that was the idea. One of the discoveries was that cancer uses tricks on the immune system. The reason previous immunotherapies hadn't worked, the reason you don't have an immune system that just attacks cancer and you feel sick, or you've got fever and runny nose and that sort of thing, as you said, with the common cold, that cancer just is there and you need a test to figure it out if it's even present. The reason for that turns out to be that cancer is suppressing or taking advantage of other built-in sort of circuit breakers within our immune system, shutting down the immune response against it, sort of using a secret handshake, if you will, to say to the cancer cell, to say to rather the immune cell, to the T cell that's there to kill it, no, no, I'm cool. Don't kill me. I'm a regular body cell. Maybe I'm a, you know, maybe I'm a developing fetus. I look a little weird, but trust me, I'm okay because I've got this secret handshake. That secret handshake is called PD-1, PD-L1. There are a number of them. It's a checkpoint or a break on T cell response that was discovered. And one side of the handshake is the PD side. It really doesn't matter what these things are. It matters what they're called, of course, because you want to be able to reference them. But they could have been called Bob and Sally. It really, really, yeah. PD-1 doesn't mean anything useful in this case. But one side's on the cancer cell, one side's on the immune cell, and you can block that handshake. And Jeff was testing a drug that was supposed to block that handshake. It's an antibody that basically, so you can think of it as filling the hand of that handshake on the cancer side, making it so cancer couldn't give it, and essentially turning on the lights and exposing the cancer to the immune system and letting it do its job. They were doing everything for him. He was so desperate. It was right at Christmas time as well, and the guy that was in charge of this was trying to fill. They really wanted to get these. They had great hope for this drug. It really seemed like it was going to work after so many things had failed, and they needed to get these clinical trials underway, and they needed to fill those trials, but they needed patients healthy enough to do it. And Jeff Schwartz at that point just didn't seem healthy enough, and they were trying everything. He was eating broccoli. He was trying to get all of his numbers up. They even tried this thing that actually is documented in the medical literature about rubbing his earlobes to release more white blood cells. He was just trying. He was throwing anything at the wall. And he considered it a miracle when he was allowed into this trial, really at the last second, as he was sitting about to enter another trial that would not have helped him. It was just all, you know, he wanted to do something and the time was running out. They literally called into the clinic and said, stop, he's doing something else now, we're just going to let him in. And it's really such a moving, remarkable story. And you just think, he's not a religious person, but it really gave him a sense of it was something in the air, something to do with fate, and also an indebtedness to how lucky he was to pass that on, which is part of what he does in this book and through the book, and part of what he does, you know, in the story of this book. And the drug that he tested, which is blocking the cancer, the tumor side of that handshake, which is to say it's an anti-PD-L1 drug, he was patient zero. He was the first full responder. He doesn't have cancer now. He doesn't have detectable cancer, and it happened fast. And he went from, it was his son that noticed the difference almost before he did. Within, it was really weeks, his son suddenly said, Dad, what's going on? And he said, why? He said, you can't lift me. Why are you lifting me up and to show me things now? And he realized that's how dramatic it was, because when it works, it really works. And it really worked for him. The scans, you could just see that there was they had melted away. And you have to be careful with this because it doesn't yet work for every patient or every cancer. But when it works often in a really robust and seemingly it you know, people think of it as miraculous. But it's really it really is as miraculous as our own 500 million year old defense system that we call our immune system is. Once it's unleashed, it's incredibly powerful. And
well, Charles,
as I say, it's really the only thing that can match, we've discovered, cancer step for step as it mutates and tries to come back and changes, as it does for other diseases. So really exciting time. And he was a wonderful ambassador, if you will, for the story, because not only was he first, and not only did he not have a thought in his head about cancer before he got it, and not only is he not a scientific guy, he doesn't know any of this stuff, and it's just a lot of complicated words, and he just had to trust in the guys in the white coats, and he just knows that he got lucky, and he wants other people to get lucky too, because if you're armed with the information, you can make better choices, you can ask better questions, and in this book, as you see in the breakthrough, you see him passing this information on, and changing another life directly
exactly.
by doing so.
Well, he had a miraculous recovery. I mean, he was on his deathbed, and he actually said when he got that first injection, he could feel something good happening. So that's just amazing. Charles, I want to go back to my takeaways. So one of the major takeaways, as I mentioned earlier, is that fighting cancer is complex. It's difficult, many moving pieces, and there's been an extraordinary amount of people involved in this whose contributions have brought us to today. My other takeaway from this is that I've never been more hopeful for all of the people that have cancer, and I'm not saying that they're ready to go, but it appears to be the last 8 to 10 years, so many things have happened. There's a couple of hundred products on the market right now, and there are thousands more to come that are going through trials and going through final work with the various companies. Maybe we can break from the history, and you can bring us to what some of the work that's being done today, and you know, with accelerators, with breaks, and with being able to target specific treatments.
Yeah, it is an extraordinary time for the researchers, which is an abstract thing. That's very, you know, it's some of these guys, had they been born a decade earlier, they may have labored and never seen a single success. The people now are seeing generational leaps in weeks or months in terms of progress. So you now have, as you say, that first generation. They're called the checkpoint inhibitors. They essentially block the secret handshake, or take the, you know, we've found that if cancer has its foot stomping on the brake of the immune system, we couldn't figure out why it wouldn't go. It turns out we had the handbrake on the whole time. We can block that. And that makes a lot of other things work a lot better. Sometimes that's enough, and sometimes you combine that with something else, and it works when it wouldn't have worked previously, or it works more effectively. So some of the ways they're doing that, and any of those treatments, by the way, any of those ideas or drugs or anything like that, anything that targets the immune system and unleashes the immune system, that's a cancer immunotherapy. So it's when we talk about the cancer immunotherapy, we're talking about all of those things, the things we have, the things that are coming, the things we haven't even thought of yet, because that's really the breakthrough of the breakthrough, is just the permission, the green light to explore this direction. A lot of scientists I talk to refer to it as a penicillin moment. It's not just about penicillin. It's about an entire class of drugs, an entire different way of understanding the war that we're in with this disease and how to fight it. So we've already vanquished some forms of, for instance, childhood leukemia. Mm-hmm. That's been done through something they call CAR-T. I try to, there are a lot of names and words and so forth, and you know, terminologies, and I try really hard in the book to make sure you understand it, whether you memorize it or not. There's no quiz at the end, you know. But CAR-T is a really cool one. It's sort of, I would compare it to a RoboCop T-cell. T-cell is a hunter-killer that recognizes foreign cells, cells that are not yourself, not supposed to be there, and it kills them. And a single one can kill hundreds of thousands of bad guys. In this case, what they do is they make a T cell that is customized to recognize your cancer. Customized to cancers. Also, cancers look different than other cells. It's just right on the outside. There's, you know, they're just different proteins. So sort of a fingerprint, and those proteins on a cancer cell are distinct, and you can use them as a target, as a bullseye. So they create RoboCops. As I say, called CAR-Ts, RoboCop T-cells that target exactly that cancer. And they grow them up, I say, in a bucket, but it's obviously, you know, a lab and no buckets, true buckets are involved. But it's a clone army of hundreds of millions of these things, and infuse it into your bloodstream. It goes in once, and it lives in you forever, and it is ever vigilant there to target your cancer. And as I say, when those work, incredible. there are other ways of doing that, too. You can make those fingerprints, cancer's fingerprints, more obvious to the immune system by essentially infecting the tumors. So they use a virus that usually would infect your healthy cells. Instead, you target it, make it so it infects the tumor cells, and then they get weird, and they look weird, and the immune system can better recognize the weirdness. That's another form of immunotherapy. Yeah.
Charles, I think we need to also mention that CAR-T is prohibitively expensive to be able to sequence the genome of the person, of the tumor, and to put together the custom cocktail of T cells. It's about $300,000, so I just wanted to mention that to our users. It's not the type of thing that you go to your oncologist and just get. You may have to pay for it.
Yeah, that's a problem with healthcare in general. And these new immunotherapies, some of them are really expensive. I think $300,000 is conservative when you put in all the other expenses to it. And that's what they call an economic toxicity. That's sort of a side effect of all of this. And that's a real problem. If this isn't available to us, if it's not available to me and you, and if it's just something for a few lucky elites, that's not a true breakthrough for public health and the war on cancer.
But we'll hopefully see the pricing coming down. It's so new. And unfortunately, Charles, we are out of time, but we want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. Again, the book is titled The Breakthrough, Immunotherapy and the Race to Cure Cancer. We're speaking with Charles Graber. Charles, best of luck with this book. It's very good.
Oh, thank you very much. Great talking to you.
Thanks, okay. Charles.
And, fascinating conversation.